Israel lectures Palestinians protesting peacefully in Gaza that they are, in fact, taking part in violent disturbances. That's news to the many nonpartisan men, women, children, and elderly who have, for the fourth Friday in a row, taken part in the Great March of Return, demanding in part a right of their return to their homelands and lands taken away from them by the Israeli occupation since 1948. Even the White House envoy has now come out to say that desperate Palestinians have every right to protest their circumstances. Join me, Waqar Rizvi, as we continue to discuss the Great March of Return.
Thousands of Palestinians participated in fresh rallies near the fence dividing Gaza and Israeli-occupied territories for the fourth Friday in a row. The rallies were held despite the fact that Israel had earlier dropped leaflets in Gaza warning Palestinians not to approach the area. This Friday was dubbed the Friday of Martyrs and Prisoners.
The fourth Friday is dedicated to the prisoners and martyrs to prove our faithfulness to those who were killed for the sake of our freedom over the past 70 years. Our message is that we will continue to follow their lead.
Palestinians from different walks of life participated in Friday's rallies in five different locations along the fence.
We, the families of prisoners and martyrs, are here today in the Friday of Martyrs and Prisoners to stand in solidarity with the Palestinian prisoners in the Israeli jails. I call on the international community and the human rights organizations to support the prisoners.
Despite international outrage, Israeli forces once again opened fire on peaceful protesters, causing more casualties. They used live ammunition, rubber bullets, and tear gas against the demonstrators.
I'm here for the fourth Friday. I bring with me onions just to help the protesters who inhale tear gas. I hope that the siege will be lifted. I hope that things become better and the prisoners regain their freedom.
The rallies were part of the Great Return March, which began on March 30th. Protesters demand that Palestinian refugees be given the right to return to their ancestral homes in the territories under Israeli occupation. However, by threatening protesters and using excessive force against them, Israel denies the Palestinian protesters their basic right to peaceful assembly, granted to them by international human rights law.
This is for the fourth Friday in a row in which Palestinians gather along the so-called buffer zone with Israel to protest the regime's decades-long occupation of their land. Israeli forces were once armed to their teeth, ready to shoot indiscriminately at peaceful protesters, as they did so in the past 3 weeks, killing dozens of people. Hala Safadi, Press TV, Gaza.
Our guests, for tonight's discussion are journalist and Middle East expert Sayed Mohsen Abbas, who is joining us live from London. And we're also joined by reporter and political commentator Maxine Dorver, who is joining us live from New York. Thank you both for joining us. Maxine, I'll start with you. What do you make, Maxine, of the Israeli army's leaflets, which were dropped in Gaza, warning people that they are, in fact, participating in violent disturbances and that Hamas is taking advantage of them to carry out terror attacks? What terrorism are these peaceful protesters carrying out?
Well, I think Hamas is taking advantage of the people, not just during these Fridays, but for the last years that Hamas has been in control of the Gaza Strip area. If Hamas were building vertical residential buildings instead of horizontal tunnels for terror, the people would have a very different way of living. To begin with regard to the leaflets, I think the leaflets are a useful method of attempting to warn the people that they are approaching a dangerous situation. If the attempt is to cross the border, then it is an attempt that's illegal and will be met with resistance from the army, and that is not a good situation for either side. If a buffer zone is enforced and if the protests are occurring on the edge of a buffer zone, the likelihood of anyone being injured is virtually none. And if the buffer zone were to be enforced, as the American envoy has suggested, the purpose of the protests that I understand, which is to make the point of a political, emotional, historical statement, would be met without injury to anyone protesting.
All right, Sayed Mohsen, what do you make of that? Do you think that these people are taking part in violent disturbances and that they are doing Hamas's bidding?
Well, there's no weaponry. There's been no evidence of any kind of, if you like, militant action. It's people with rubber tires running around on the edges of this kind of zone, this buffer zone, which actually belongs to the Palestinians in the first place. Because let's get some facts on the ground absolutely right. Only 1/10 of the original land of the Palestinians now, in any way, shape, or form, is controlled by Palestinians. 1/10. Even the Oslo Accords gave 1/5, but they don't even have that because Benjamin Netanyahu has allowed indiscriminately to break the international law in which Jewish settlements are opened up with state complicity. And honestly, to push the people of Palestine in the way that this absolutely diabolical, disgusting, fascist regime of Benjamin Netanyahu has, quite frankly, any other nation would have gone far more than just trying to do some peaceful demonstrations. They'd create a revolution to overthrow the whole establishment, because it is fundamentally an apartheid, racist establishment, which ultimately deserves its comeuppance as soon as possible.
Maxine, you know, I wanted to put you on the spot for a moment, if you allow me, Maxine, as a woman. And I wanted to ask you, you know, the Israeli army's Arabic spokesman, Avichai Adria, maybe mispronouncing that name, on his social media has said that any woman protesting in Gaza, quote unquote, lacks honor. And he goes on to say that any woman who does so then acts wildly against her feminine nature, end quote. He then goes on, Maxine, to quote a Saudi religious scholar who again tells women they should just be sitting at home and they should have nothing to do with protests or otherwise. If somebody said that to you, Maxine, trying to limit your freedom to protest things that you feel strongly about, what would you make of that?
It's an interesting place to be put, the spot, as you said. As a woman, and as a woman who is aware of politics, I certainly would not want anyone to designate my participation in a protest, should I choose to be in a protest, based on gender. The attitude that is being expressed is one of very, very conservative Muslim tradition, which would dictate that a woman's place is in the home and that a woman should be hidden or veiled or and kept from being involved in active politics. There is a new element in the protest, which is the involvement of women, and that involvement is a very interesting one. I, as a citizen, not as a woman or speaking from any point of view except as an observer, would comment on the fact that women-led governments are more rare, and perhaps if they were less rare, would result in less conflict. There is the aura of family, of caring about the livelihood and the life of one's children, one's family, one's husband, brothers, etc., and sisters and mothers, that is implied by the feminine.
Okay, Maxine,
nature.
I do apologize for interrupting you, but I just wanted to clarify that you're saying, Maxine,
that would be something that would.
You're saying, Maxine, that you do then disagree with this Israeli army spokesman.
I am saying that gender should not be a factor in political activity.
Okay, so Sayed Mohsen, what do you make of that? Because that certainly does show, Sayed Mohsen, that A, this army spokesman using a Saudi religious scholar's point of view to begin with is odd, but secondly, what do you make of the fact that he doesn't want women to come out and protest?
Well, the thing is that everything the Israeli regime does, whether it's their military wing or Shin Bet, the internal domestic security agency, or whether it's Mossad, everything about that whole entity has turned into a vile, if you like, manifestation, intolerance, and absolute, if you like, inhumanity. I mean, Netanyahu at the moment is embroiled in corruption charges. He lashes out. I mean, the justice system is under pressure from the right wing, the increasingly right wing, if you like, politicos within the establishment as well, to become even more hardline. The Israeli citizens, 1.7 million of them who are Palestinians, are discriminated against. They're harassed. They have no equality in that true sense. They're actually living in fear because they're constantly having to watch themselves in terms of being looked upon as, if you like, outsiders. The 5 million Palestinians who over five decades have endured military occupation of the most heinous kind, are literally now creating an open air prison in Gaza, are in a sort of psychological state of trauma. Can you imagine little children who've grown up over the last 10, 20, 30 years into adults who had to live through this trauma? Do you really expect them today to be as reasonable as actually they are? They're still trying to go to this border to protest peacefully. And what are they met with? Today, four young protesters were shot dead on the spot. Again, none of them carried any arms, no weapons whatsoever. The level of, if you like, humanity is absolutely, lack of sort of humanity is disgusting. But actually, the international, if you like, community looks on, and that's perhaps arguably even more disgusting, that there is an Israeli exceptionalism. No other nation in the world would get away with what's happening there today. And Israel gets this exceptionalism because they have levers of power and dominance within Western superpowers, and they give them this license to behave as a rogue state, as a complete set of, if you like, totalitarian fascists. And that, I think, is the real issue. Women's rights don't even come into it. They don't give human rights to children or adults per se on an equal basis if they happen to be Arab Palestinians.
Maxine, go ahead. You had a reaction.
Let's talk about children's rights. Let's talk about children's rights and the abuse of children. Let's talk about what's going on in the UNRWA schools, for example, and in the textbooks of the UNRWA schools that are teaching children the attitude of hate and the attitude of intolerance, that are taking children from age 5, 6, and putting them into military training, into summer camps in which they are using live rifles by the time they're very young teenagers. Let's talk about that as child abuse. That has nothing to do with anyone except Hamas. And with the attitude that Hamas is.
So are you talking about the kibbutzes, which are the Israeli Defense Force
that they must
runs?
Kill,
is that the Jewish
that they
kibbutzes?
Must kill and hate.
No,
but
the Israelis run kibbutzes. The Israeli establishment has run kibbutzes for young people described exactly the same as you've just described.
Look.
The Israelis have run kibbutzes for decades, which actually indoctrinate the kids into Zionist hate ideology against Palestinian children, against the Palestinians and the people who are actually the rightful owners of that land. You know, they've been doing this. You don't need to teach children to hate Israel.
Okay, we won't be able to understand either of you. I do apologize. Sayed Mohsen, let's just get Maxine. Maxine, the point that Sayed Mohsen is saying there, Maxine, is making Maxine, I believe, is that we have seen, Maxine, those videos of young Israeli children chanting slogans against Arabs. We have seen Israeli children even being used to sign missiles that were used, for example, to be thrown upon Gaza, signing those missiles. With various different mottos of sorts. We've seen rallies in Tel Aviv, even in New York, in fact, and Maxine, calling for the death of Arabs by Israelis. So Maxine, all of that then combined also shows a lot of hate from the other side.
You know what? Hate is a very devastating practice, whatever side it is practiced upon. And hate is practiced upon the people by certain leaders, the leaders of Hamas, the leaders of the extremist factions in Israel, the leaders of extremist factions wherever they exist, are using the people as pawns. Why have the people not been given the cement that's been poured into terrorist tunnels to build houses? Why are children being taught to use live guns, whether it's on the, whichever side of the border it is on? It doesn't make it better. You've got teenagers facing teenagers, and they are put in positions of attacking one another rather than building with one another. There are some attempts to open the eyes of people on both sides of the borders. The attempts of Seeds of Peace, for example, which is criticized wildly on both sides of the extremist borders, mm-hmm. has introduced young Arabs to young Jewish Israelis, young Palestinians to young Israelis, and I'm not even going to say Jewish or Muslim, but rather national borders, national passport carriers, okay. and it works. And people get to understand the humanity of one another. But if the leaders insist on creating, on fomenting terror, on teaching terror from the age of mini understanding, of having a okay. Minnie Mouse or a Mickey Mouse character.
Point taken, Maxine. I do apologize because we're running out of time. I wanted
to give
Sayed Mohsen the chance to respond to you. Sayed Mohsen, go ahead.
What nonsense. This lady's obviously clearly living on some other time frame or some other planet, which I really can't understand, because let's get to the cut to the chase. Is it the Gazans who are blockading any kind of economic sustenance to the 2 million or so people living in there, in that open prison? Is that the Gazans who are doing that? Is it the Gazans who are who have bombed themselves with white phosphorus? Is it the Gazans who are being confronted with putting up with these fences or being checked at every point? Is it the Gazans who are creating all of the hatred that actually has created this miserable situation in this region? And do the Israelis actually think that violence and the terror that they perpetrate within the hearts, minds, and families that exist within those, do they think for one second that they can live in the long run within an area they have effectively occupied, grabbed, taken from somebody else? Do they really think that in the long term this is a sustainable solution? And do they think that a military solution is the one that is going to sustain them forever there? Well, Hezbollah and Hamas are entitled to stand up and have their own, if you like, defense mechanisms against barbarous gas and chemical attacking Israeli forces, which is exactly what they did, using illegal white phosphorus in the last in the last war against the Gazans. And what do these people outside expect? That these tunnels they talk about, you know, the tunnels and the cement that you're talking about, my dear lady, the reality is that what they ought to be building is more military weaponry in order to be able to confront Israel properly. And that's the only solution at the moment that Israel wants to have. There's no peaceful solution that the Israeli establishment wants for this. It is going to be another okay. military settlement that's going to come very soon.
The Israeli establishment removed itself from Gaza, removed itself entirely from Gaza, and left behind working farms, and left behind a reasonable society that if you look at the pictures from the time the Israeli army, the Israeli country, the Israeli government entirely pulled out of Gaza, and compare it with what is happening today, whose fault is that? That's the government of Gaza.
Israel gets money from Americans. Israel gets sponsorship from outside transnational corporations.
Do not
be so disgusting as to compare this Israeli wealth, which is pouring in, and their illegal occupation of a land that does not belong to them.
Israeli wealth is earned.
All those people should just leave. Have the decency.
But if I could just come in here, Maxine, one of the glaring omissions that you made there, Maxine, is that yes, Israel may have left Gaza in whatever situation it did, but then it went ahead and blockaded the entire territory, ensuring that economic progress could not occur. We have upwards of 40% unemployment in that territory. Israel blockades. Israel forces and pressures Egypt to keep it blockaded and closed. So Egypt and Israel have partnered over keeping the people of Gaza in, as David Cameron had said, an open-air prison.
Look, I think the people of Gaza would welcome an open borders. Obviously, they would. The people of Gaza are generally far more educated than the average person in the world. They are university graduates. They have huge potential. And the people of Gaza aren't the threat. It's the terrorists of Gaza who are the threat to Egypt. And Egypt is certainly a large enough country to be able to choose where it limits its borders. Israel's a little state. Egypt is 10 or 20 times the size of Israel. The idea that Egypt should be having to blockade because it feels a threat is a serious one to look at. Why does Egypt feel threatened? Because the leadership has attempted to overthrow or cause terror or kill Egyptian soldiers in the Sinai. And this is not something that Egypt as a sovereign nation is going to accept. It's not something that Israel as a sovereign nation is going to accept either. And once the leadership will stop leading the Gazan people along a path of terror, the Gazan people will have an opportunity to rebuild. There is no reason that the same abilities that exist in the people of Israel, that exist in the people
Maxine,
of Gaza.
I'm going to interrupt you. I do apologize. We only have a minute and a half. I do apologize. I wanted to give the final word to Sayed Mohsen. Sayed Mohsen, basically, I'm going to paraphrase Maxine. I'm going to take their liberty to do that. But basically, Maxine is saying this has to be done on Israel's terms. If Israel says it's okay to open the borders for Gaza, then only Gaza will be opened up. What do you make of that?
Well, that's exactly what
they do. No, I will not accept
do.
That. I will say that it has to be done on negotiated terms.
Are a terror state. Israel is a terrorist state. It is sponsoring state terrorism against a people which it has imprisoned, oppressed, and is killing daily. Today, four more Palestinians, unarmed Palestinians, were killed by these nasty Israeli defense forces who have no humanity, who basically got orders from up on high, from the state itself, to say it's fine to kill children who are demonstrating without anything. What does that leave behind? Anybody watching on a neutral level, in a country where you're able to just indiscriminately say it's okay to kill unarmed kids, tell me about the humanity of those people who give such orders. There is no humanity. These people are they're craven, they're desperate. They know they are an unsustainable, if you like, entity in that region. They know that only military power, their nuclear weapons, their threats of gas and chemical attacks, their weapons are their only resource to be able to keep these people under some sort of control. Now, the reality is that you can't expect Palestinians or the Arab world to indefinitely look on and carry on counting, having body counts by a terror state.
Okay, Sayed Mohsen, I do apologize. I'll have to stop you there. Unfortunately, the clock has gotten the best of us. But of course, we do appreciate both your contributions to tonight's discussion. That was Sayed Mohsen Abbas, journalist and Middle East expert, speaking to us live from London. And we were also joined by Maxine Dover, reporter and political commentator, who is speaking to us live from New York. And of course, viewers, we appreciate you joining us as well. Until next time, good night.